Good morning. I am Tim Morrison, your host for Right Here, Right Now, a weekly internet radio show in which we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, or the book they are in the process of writing, or even that book they intend to write someday. My co-host on Right Here, Right Now is Stone Payton. He's a vital cog at Business Radio X with his own show, High Velocity Radio, as well as serving as co-host with other broadcasts. Good morning, Stone.
Good morning, sir. Thanks for letting me join you guys.
Well, absolutely. We need somebody to push the buttons as well and keep me on track. It's always good to see you. You know, last week in our first broadcast, we had three guests from three distinct professions, and each of them were authors. One had written one book, the second one had written two, and our third one had written three books. And they gave us insights to their writing journeys. Well, today, Stone, we have three guests, each one business professional. One is an author working on her second book, and the other two are working at becoming authors. And so what I want to do today is focus on that writing journey. We have in the studio Laura Bearing, Greta Jaeger, and Stan Gay. Now, Stone, you know a bit about this. You've written a book, and now you're working on revising it or maybe writing a whole new book as well.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do both because I can't decide. I'm indecisive.
We like that. That means two, huh?
Yeah, but it's like going to be fun. It was a very rewarding experience for me, and I really feel like I'm a much better writer now than I was 10 years ago, so I think the next book will be better written, but it was a cathartic experience for me, and I think it helped me crystallize my keynote message.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's what happens when people write books, just all kinds of things other than just writing a book. They get ideas and focus, and we like that. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to talk with each of my guests individually, and then I'm going to ask them to interact with each other when we're done with all three. So, Laura, we're going to start with you. Laura Bearing is the founder and president of True Voices, a coaching consulting firm serving individuals and teams in a variety of methods. Laura holds several certifications as a professional career coach, and she is a certified paralegal as well. She holds master's and bachelor's degrees in music vocal performance. That really equips you for being a writer, doesn't it? And you're the author of the Risk a Day Journal. Well, welcome, Laura. And as I said, our focus today is on the writing process. But what I would like you to start with, if you would, is to share a bit about the Risk a Day Journal, specifically how it has motivated you to work at writing a second book. Some people get done with the first book and say, man, I am done. Not you, though.
No, actually, Tim, first of all, thank you for having me here.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, actually, I'm a bit like Stone in that once I wrote the first book and started talking about it and speaking on it and such, I realized I want to write it again. Because I know so much more right. now about the subject than I did when I put the words on paper. It also truly has helped my business in the sense that I not only have a lot more to talk about on the fly, you know, it's an energy in the business that wasn't there before there was a book. And I can't say enough about that, although I don't have really specific words for it.
Isn't that a challenge? Because I know what you're saying, but what I'm going to challenge you back and say, talk to our listening audience a little bit more about what is that energy that's there that wasn't there before?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing was, as you said, Tim, I have this other book that I'm working on, and it was the book that I thought I was going to write first. It was the big work. And it remains this big work to be done. But I got to a point where I thought, you know what? I have to get something finished. Uh-huh. I've got all these ideas in my head, and I'm going to get something finished. And so that's why I started with the Risk a Day Journal, because the tool of taking a risk a day is one that I use with my clients all the time and with myself, too. And it creates an energy and a momentum in the client's life. And so once I started... once I wrote the book and had the finished product, first of all, that alone was huge. Seeing it in not black and white, but in living color.
Holding it in your hands, yes. As I'm doing with your book right now, holding
yes.
it. Yeah.
And that was amazing. And then once I got to talk about it, there was something very grounding about having a product that other people could touch and hold.
Well, let me see if I followed you. You started writing a book that became almost an insurmountable task.
Yes.
And then you wrote this.
Yes.
So that your first book is actually your second manuscript.
Exactly.
I understand that because my third book was my first manuscript. And then 13 years, 27 rejection letters,
oh,
and three
goodness.
Rewrites later, it was out. What kept you going?
On this book, The Risk of Day Journal, what kept me going is I actually took a class. A colleague of mine, Marcy Nelson Garrison, is a creativity coach, and we kind of trade coaching off and on when we need a boost. And she had a class about creating, and she said, okay, by the end, we're going to have a website with all of our products on it, and we're going to have a launch sale.
Boy, that's intimidating, isn't
it? And
it
took me about 30 days. Once I decided to really do it, it took me and Vanessa Lowry, my fabulous designer, about 30 days to get all the words down and all the pages numbered correctly. And so having a deadline really helped, and having a deadline in which other people are involved.
That does help. And let's put a plug in for Vanessa again.
Yes, let's do.
She was one of my guests last week and talked a lot about what she did, of course. She also designed the cover and did the layout for my Writing Secrets book.
Yes.
So we know the quality work, right?
Yes. And I wish you radio listeners could see my cover because it's gorgeous.
Well, we'll give you an opportunity to tell them at the end of the interview how they can do just that.
Okay.
What was motivating you then as you did? I'm paging through here. You've got poetry. You've got some bullet point thoughts. Go for it. What did you hope to stimulate among people with this A Risk a Day?
I truly hope that it helps people not only know that they are worth having their heart's desires fulfilled, but that they can do it in small steps every day. That when we hear the word risk, we automatically get a kind of clutch in our throat or our chest or something. And these are not bungee jumping. These are not skydiving, unless that's your heart's desire.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be something as small as going a different way to work and seeing if there's a new coffee shop. I don't know. I'm making that up on the fly, but it could be telling your spouse something that you've been thinking about, but you haven't had the courage to say. It could be saying, I just don't want to go to eat Chinese food again tonight.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, their goal, their heart's desire is something tangible, but for some people, it's simply speaking up. And that's what I want to encourage people to do, is figure out who they are and then be that out loud.
Now, in your experience, has writing a book meant more money to you, either directly or indirectly? And maybe that's a less than noble question, but I got to believe that a lot of folks out there thinking about writing a book are thinking, if I do this, I'm going to make more money.
That's a great question. And I have to confess that I was one of those people that I thought I was going to make more money, but I thought I was going to sell a lot of books and make money that way. And that could still happen. I have not gone all out as much as I know I could have in terms of promoting the book. Where I do go, people buy the books. I've had a little mini book tour recently. But what I know is that because of that buzz, because of that energy, I at least seem more credible. I may not be more credible, but I seem more credible and people are more interested. And I have gotten some new clients that I believe either would not have come to me or would have, there would have been a longer sales cycle had the book not been in existence.
Well, isn't that somewhat of that energy you were talking about? You took the risk,
mm-hmm.
so that you actually practice what you preach.
Yeah.
Or what you teach, should we say.
Yes.
And in the business world out there, there's this concept that if you write a book, you must be an authority.
Mm-hmm. There is that conception or misconception, whichever way you want to look at it.
Ooh.
But you're right. And at least it's what I used to say, you know, I have this master's in voice. And people say, oh, you have a master's. I said, all it means is I put up with X number of years more blank than the people who have bachelor's degrees.
That's true.
So,
that's true.
What I know is at least for 30 days, I put my nose to the grindstone. Now, I'm selling myself short. I actually think the book is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that writing a book is an important thing to do for business people if they have a message they feel is important to get out there.
What is this book, your second book, going to be about?
This second book is...
Which is actually your first book,
yes,
but your second.
My first book that will come out second,
mm-hmm,
is the working title is Conversations with True Voices. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed about 150 women in the arts and entertainment industry about how they came to be in a, see, I can't even make a sentence of it, how they came to be in a profession in which they use their true voices every day to make a living. So these are writers and painters and songwriters and dancers and actors and such. How they came to do that without selling themselves out. How they face their fears, how they, what kind of mantras, what kind of experiences helped them stay on the path so that regular people,
mm-hmm,
like us could maybe say, well, if they could do it, then I can do it.
That's what I wondered, if that was the direction you were going to go,
mm-hmm,
because what I see in what you just shared is that the worker bees, if you will, the commoners, if you will, because, mm-hmm, you're talking about the arts people, we, regardless of what we do, have to speak with our true voice, mm-hmm, to listen to what's inside. And what might be the worst thing that could happen if we listen to our true voice?
Someone won't agree.
Oh, my.
Now, there are certainly consequences. I mean, if your boss doesn't agree with the fact that you answered the phone, you know,
mm-hmm,
Joe's Coffee Shop when you really work at a law firm,
yeah,
you
that
might lose your
good.
Job.
No, that wouldn't be good. You would do something like that.
Well, it sounds to me like it's something that's happened.
I never answered the phone that way. But I did have a colleague who would answer the phone, what?
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
And okay, she always did that for the internal calls, but every now and then she would do it to an external call. So anyway, that's a whole other story, as they say. But yes, what I truly believe is that whenever we set an intention to take a risk,
mm-hmm,
and I'm really going to go all out here and say every single time we set an intention to take a risk and we take it,
mm-hmm,
regardless of the outcome, regardless of the result, regardless of whether we get what we wanted or not, we receive the reward of having listened to our true voice.
I like that. I like that. And I got to admit that the answer you gave was not what I anticipated. I was anticipating you might have to find a new job.
Yes.
But at least you've listened to your voice. But that's great. Well, I'll tell you, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm going to have to bring this segment to a close. But folks who want to be in touch with you, folks who want to see the cover of your book, what should they do?
They should go to either theriskadayjournal.com, all one word, theriskadayjournal.com, or truevoices.com.
Great. And you're willing to sit still, wait through the other interviews so you can talk to the others?
Okay. Actually, I'm looking forward to it.
Great. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, Greta, you're up next. Greta Yeager is the founder of Coaching Your Dream, and she works with people from all walks of life to help them negotiate the rugged and complex landscapes of their lives and then navigate through the stresses, tensions, and issues. Greta holds a BA in psychology and a master's of science in professional counseling. She's a certified coach and a licensed professional counselor. Well, Greta, it is so good to see you across the table from me this morning.
I'm glad to be here.
And, you know, we're focusing on the writing process, the early stages, and that's kind of where you are, isn't it? You have begun a book with the working title of what?
Grace, Gratitude, and Greatness.
The three G's, huh?
Yes, the three G's.
Well, we like that. Talk to me. Talk to us about that. What are you looking at in that?
Well, I of course, like everybody who would like to write a book was struggling with a title first for some reason. I don't know. I decided I wanted to start there instead of actually writing out a outline. So,
mm-hmm,
I went ahead and decided to go with some sort of alliteration, and I thought, you know, I really want to hit some specific points that I know are important to be joyful in your life. And I know grace is very important, mm-hmm. that we have a connection to God, that we are grateful and thankful to be connected to God and the rest of us.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. And then I also knew, and of course, gratitude is a part of grace, yes, but they are separate things in the sense that we have to have gratitude in every aspect of our life. Okay. And then greatness is because we all can be great. It's really a matter of attitude and a belief in ourselves. And most of us struggle because we don't believe in ourselves, not because we aren't already great. We mm-hmm. are. Okay. So once I came up with that concept, that's when I started to actually decide to write a journey, basically.
Okay. Okay. Well, are you surprised that you're writing a book, that you're trying to write a book?
Am I surprised? Well, yeah, because I don't think I ever thought I'd write a book.
Oh, you're one of the few that isn't going to write a book someday. Oh, well. So what was your inspiration for it to even begin? That's a big step.
It is a big step. My inspiration, you know, when I actually, the part I sent you happened like 2 years ago. So
is that right?
Yeah, and I would say my inspiration was, what in the heck am I going to do? I'm sitting here as a coach, and I'm not pushing forward in my business, and I knew that I had something to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe it's time for me to just put it down mm-hmm. on paper and see where it goes. And so I spent like 4 weeks, almost every single day, just brain dumping all the thoughts and feelings and sort of the journey that I'd had over the last like 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it's been for you. In a way, it's been a struggle and painful, but it's also liberating, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First of all, I figured out I actually could write a book.
Imagine that. Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
So yeah. Who did you write the book for? Who did you have in mind that would buy this and use it and profit from it?
Well, mostly people that are in some sort of life crisis, stuck in some way. A lot of people, I call it going through your midlife crisis. It can also be an identity crisis. But anybody saying, is this it? Is this as good as it gets? I've been there. I know what it's like. And the journey that I talk about in Grace, Gratitude, and Greatness is all about what I believe has helped me get through that stuck place. And hopefully will help other people in that stuck place move beyond it.
And you approach that with confidence. I've got to say, because I've seen you on Tuesday mornings in a networking group,
mm-hmm.
30 people or more all gathered, and it's your turn to speak, and nobody's paying attention, and so you stand up on the chair and command attention. You know what it takes, don't you?
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah. Can you see that, Stone?
Mm. Well, I've had to tell people in a networking environment that I am standing up, but oh. I never thought about getting
Oh, yeah. Just jump right up on the chair. Just jump yes. on the chair.
I'm familiar with your challenge.
Do you have a role model?
Do I have a role
model? In terms of your writing and your work, is there somebody you're trying to emulate, or not so much emulate, but say, you know, this book struck me when I read it. Maybe it's going to guide me in what I'm doing now?
You know, I don't. I have mentors that mm-hmm. are in my past, but I'm, you know what? None of them have actually written a book that I know of. Oh, I know one. Gandhi.
Oh, yeah, he did. Well, so what I like about what you're sharing, Greta, is that I think a lot of people out there say, well, I have to emulate somebody who's already written a book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got to be like John Grisham, or I've got to be like, I don't know, Carolyn Meese when
right.
I write. You just want to write.
Right. I actually, Tim, quite frankly, thought that if I'm going to speak for my own voice, I couldn't emulate somebody else.
Good.
Yeah. So I tried not to think about other writers because I would get stuck. I would get frustrated. I would feel like I'm not measuring up to them. Well, then my voice isn't going to be expressed.
And that's a critical piece, and I'm glad you brought that up, because when I work with people in their writing, mm-hmm. they tell me who they're trying to sound like, and I say, oh, please don't. Please
right.
don't. Be yourself. Find your voice. But that's part of what you do as a coach, as a counselor, therapist, right?
Yes.
You're working on helping people find their own voice.
Yes, in a similar way to Laura. And I actually believe that if we can find our passion and we can get back to the dreams that we had when we were young, we will find our own voice. And I help people get through those blocks mm-hmm. that they've put in front of them. And they, yes, it is us. We do put our own blocks there.
Oh, my. My. As you kind of did when What Me Write a Book kind of
yes,
thing?
Yes, yes. I absolutely. That was my responsibility. I put the block in front of myself and then realized that I was doing exactly what I was trying to get people to push through.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to put that, I had to say, forget it. I'm going to step off the cliff. And right.
And how's the fall so far?
It hasn't hurt at all.
Isn't that amazing? And you can hear the wind rushing by, can't you? What do you hope to do with it?
I would like to use it in my when I'm in at speaking engagements. I'd like to sell it. I also know that, like Laura said, it's going to increase my credibility and instantaneously, from my understanding. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I feel like somebody out there may get that little piece of something that they need to have the life that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just one, maybe two, maybe three, that's way more than I had before, and I would like that.
And that's a good point to lift up, because you've done it, you've accomplished something, you've faced your own risk, threat, fear, if you will. Mm-hmm. You captured your voice, not only orally, but in written word. And you can sit there with your clients and say, look at that.
Yes.
That will be fun, won't it?
Yes, it will.
Got a parting question for us, Stone?
Well, actually, it's more related to her coaching practice. I just wonder, do you ever run across people that you determine at some point are just uncoachable?
Yes. Normally, that shows up the first session, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They clearly don't want to listen to anybody's ideas or challenges other than maybe their own.
And then what do?
You fire
I
them?
Suggest that they don't want to coach them. Or they yeah. I do fire them, but gently. I say maybe they need a therapist or maybe they just don't need either.
Wow.
Well, I'm looking forward to the book when it comes out. Do we have a time frame, or we're not putting that pressure on ourselves at
I
this point?
I think Tim's going to help me figure that out, maybe.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
I like that idea. Yeah. We'll see what we can do with that. Well, Greta, it's time to move on, but as I did with Laura, folks who want to be in touch with you should do what?
Well, they can get a hold of me through my website, www.coachingyourdreams.com, or they can email me at Greta@coachingyourdreams.com.
Good.
Yes.
And I assume you're willing to sit around while I interview Stan so that all three of you can get into the conversation eventually.
Oh, absolutely. I don't want to miss Stan.
Good. Yeah. Good. We like that. Well, Stan, the women are looking forward to you in the studio here. It is good to see you. We have Stan Gay, owner and general manager of the Atlanta Chiefs semi-professional football team that is a part of the Gridiron Developmental Football League, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
You've had a long career in the healthcare industry. You're a sports agent advisor for sports management worldwide. You've got some credentials, too, a BA in psychology and an MBA in global management. Well, I welcome you, Stan. It's been a while since we've seen each other. You're one of myriad people that intend to write a book someday. Only you've done more than just plan or intend, haven't you? You've begun to plan and even write a little bit, maybe?
Yes, Tim. First of all, thanks for having me here. I really
sure.
appreciate it. I like being in the company of greatness, Laura and Greta. I think you guys are going to be really, really great, and it's a good opportunity for me to learn some things from you guys. So, yes, I am interested in writing a book. I'm terrified at the prospect of writing a book because I know it's a lot of work, and I'm not sure that I have the skill set to write a book. So I have started putting some things down on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a title for the book, I think, Expecting to Win. I took that title from one of my coaches. I played football at the University of Alabama, and I played for probably one of the best coaches of all time, and Bear Bryant.
Well, Stan, let me interrupt you and say, tell us more about that. You didn't just play for the coach. You were what kind of an athlete?
I was a walk-on at the University of Alabama. So what that means is that I was not offered a scholarship to go play there. I actually had to pay my way through school, walk out on the football field, and try out to make the team.
This is Alabama when Bear was at his best.
At his best. They had just won the national championship 2 years in a row.
Wow.
So
and you walked on.
Yes, I walked on the football field, and I made the team. I actually earned a scholarship, started 2 years at defensive back, and earned three letters. So I'm very proud of that accomplishment.
Was there another aspect to that that would fascinate our listeners as well?
The other aspect of that is that I not only did I play for the University of Alabama, but I also was a free agent for the Atlanta Falcons, and I made the team there. So, you know, that all goes back to, I think, just the commitment level, the perseverance, the passion for what I enjoy, which is football, and it's starting to show itself now in my later years, because I own a football team.
Yeah. Well, you must have been, what, about 19 when you walked on?
Yes.
How? where did you reach inside of yourself to do that?
You know what? I don't know. That's a good question. I've always said, and I always thought that I was a little bit mature for my age. You know, coming up, I was a little bit more mature than my counterparts and my friends. And I just, I grew up tough in a very small rural area of Alabama, a town called Tuskegee, very rich in culture, black history. But I didn't have a lot. I mean, I grew up in a family of 12.
Oh, my.
Yes, and wow. My mom was a...
Your own football team.
Yeah, own football team, own choir, you name it, we had it. And my mom actually raised us. My mom and father were separated when I was about 9.
Oh, my.
And so she kind of raised us from that point, and I was the first in my family to graduate from college. So I've always had that drive to kind of be better than what I, my circumstances. And I think that, that's one of the things I want to write about in my book is how you can be better than your circumstances, and, you can expect to win even if you do come from circumstances not pristine.
So when you get this all down, this is not going to be just feel-good anecdotal. This is going to be, I lived it.
Yes.
And if I can, you probably can as well.
Absolutely. And, the sports aspect of my life translated over to, corporate America. I worked for three major healthcare companies and, was to the level of a, senior manager within the company, sales manager, corporate sales trainer, did some training. National accounts manager. So all that translated over to well into the to corporate America. And I took a lot of the values and the work ethic that I learned in sports into corporate America. So I want to bring that all back around.
I've had an opportunity to do several keynotes for healthcare organizations. And one of the things that I've noticed is they often will have former collegiate and professional athletes as part of their sales and their management teams. And why is that? Is it because athletes have a certain type of mindset? Why do you think they recruit so heavily among athletes?
Well, sales is a very competitive career. If you're going to be in sales, you really need to have a mentality that it's competitive. And they want people who are used to being competitive and will not give up easily. Because think about it, when you go out and you sell a product to someone, you're going to probably get a lot of no's. And if you're getting no's and not used to no, you're not used to fighting through those that adversity, probably give up pretty quickly. So that's why I hired a lot of athletes when I was.
You did yourself.
Yes,
did the same
absolutely,
thing.
Absolutely. So it's the competitive edge that you have.
Okay, well, I've got to say, if you're used to getting no, you are well positioned to be a writer.
You're perfectly qualified
because because we have to We say we have to love being rejected because, as I said earlier, I had 27 rejections on what became my third book. I persevered. So you're well qualified, Stan. Yeah. You've got the toughest part down. Well, I got to ask, how do you take all of what you've done and parlay that into being the owner general manager of the Atlanta Chiefs?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I actually left corporate America about 2 years ago, and after about 23 years, and had a great career in corporate America in the healthcare industry. But I decided that I wanted to do something that I really wanted to do, that I had passion for. And when I looked around at all the opportunities I had, what kept coming back to me was football. It just kept coming back. It's like, I started out with that. It's what got me the lifestyle that I have now. basically, and I wanted to give back. And I wanted to give back to those kids who don't have the opportunities to go to college, you know, guys who are, you know, have bad grades or not really well versed on the academic side, but they still wanted to play football and still needed a venue to play football to have an opportunity to be looked at by the pros. So that is what started me thinking about, let me own a team. I can own a team and I can do some things and teach some of these young men how to be men, how to, you know, persevere against in times of adversity and help move their careers forward. So that's the reason I actually bought the team. Now, that being said, it has given me so much satisfaction. I love it. I mean, I just have so much passion for it. You know, I get home at night. My wife, I've been married 21 years. My wife is like, wow, you work until like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I don't feel tired. I just love what I do. So, I want to kind of bring that all back into a book and let people know how I got from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm. And are some of the stories of your experience with the Chiefs mm-hmm. probably going to wind up in the book that you're writing someday?
Absolutely. Stories with the Chiefs, stories with the Falcons, stories with Alabama, stories with corporate America, stories. There are a lot of stories.
We like that. That's good. What has been your biggest challenge so far in the Chiefs that you didn't anticipate?
The success, actually. We've been very successful my first year. I wasn't anticipating that. You think you're going to be good.
There's a learning curve,
right? There's a learning curve. You think, well, I'm starting this thing from scratch. I didn't actually buy a team that was already established. I started it from from nothing.
You were like the New York Mets.
So that means getting the websites, the uniforms, negotiating contracts with manufacturers. I mean, just it's just been something I didn't expect. But we've been successful from that. And I think I've built an organization that is being looked at as being best practice for minor league football across the country. So I'm very pleased with that. So that has been very satisfying.
And so this really is it's a real team in a real league. This
Absolutely.
Is not just a major size sandlot group.
Oh no, this is real league, real football players. I give you an example. I have players on my team that played for D1 Division I football. Mm-hmm. One played for Virginia Tech, Alabama. I've got guys that played for Central Florida, Tennessee. I got guys from all over the place playing on my team.
And so they love it.
They love it, absolutely. And the fans will have a great time if you come out and watch us play on a Saturday night in the summer. We play from June to August at Riverwood High School.
The heat of the season.
Yeah, and most people think that it's, you know, why are you playing football in summertime? But if you think about it, we play from 7 till about 9, and summer's pretty cool.
It's
so
good.
People out there with their shorts and flip-flops and buying hot dogs and hamburgers is really family-oriented. So
I bet it's a great experience. Minor league baseball, to me, is a ton of fun. I bet you minor league football is the same way. You have better access. The kids can get closer, the whole bit, right?
Absolutely. We have signing order. My players sign autographs in the stands.
Great.
I have great cheerleaders. I have the best cheerleaders in the country, probably. 5 of my cheerleaders just made the Georgia Force cheerleading team.
Oh, my.
Actually, the girl that's the captain for the Georgia Force cheerleading team came from my team. And I have 5 of those on the Georgia Force.
Oh, you're a starter all the way around,
so,
aren't you?
It's a developmental league. We develop players to the next level. We develop coaches for the next level. And we develop cheerleaders for the next level.
Oh, that's exciting. That's right in your sweet spot, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is.
Well, Stan, how do people get in touch with you?
You can go to my website at www.atlantachiefs.org. That's www.atlantachiefs.org.
Okay, that's great. Well, now I'd like to challenge all 3 of you. Let me sit back, and do you have questions each for the other?
I have a question for Stan.
Mm-hmm.
Tuskegee, why not Auburn?
Tuskegee, not Auburn. I grew up in
What I mean is, you grew up in Tuskegee, mm-hmm. right there.
Oh, why
Auburn?
Not Auburn?
Why not Auburn?
But that's a good question. They didn't recruit me.
They had one blip.
They did not recruit me. And I was an Alabama fan, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. And I knew I was going to be a walk-on. I was recruited by Nebraska, some other teams. Nebraska flew me up, but I got off the plane and saw all that snow, and I said, no, nah, it's not going to happen. And they wanted me to come up as a walk-on as well. They have a very great, good walk-on program. But Auburn never recruited me. They never
Crazy.
Sent anybody out.
Crazy.
Moore, the AD now at Alabama, mm-hmm. came down and saw me practice, and he invited me up to be a walk-on.
Great. So a non-book question, but as an Auburn fan and somebody who spent some time in Alabama, wanted to ask.
It's going to be a sports show in a few seconds.
See, this is the beauty of this format for me is you all probably are going to ask the questions that my listeners would like to ask, and they don't come into my head.
I have a question for Laura. Are you self-publishing, and what's
yes.
the pitfalls? And
well, that is not just one other show. That's a whole series of other shows. Mm-hmm. But I did self-publish this book. My hope is to go the traditional route with what I call the friendly 3,000-pound gorilla, which is the other book. Mm-hmm. But as you heard me say, I just wanted it done. I wanted it done. I wanted it birthed and out of me and living its life and doing its work in the world. Right. And I'll give another pitch for Vanessa, because really and truly, Vanessa Lowry held my hand, mm-hmm. told me who to call, when to call them, what to say, and sometimes did it for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe I shouldn't be saying this. She might not want to be doing this for everybody. I don't know, but she was wonderful. And
well, let me jump in there and say, Stan, that's part of what I hope to do in this radio show format is to address all of those issues. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like a walking compendium of information on all aspects of that. I've gone traditional with my books, but I've also, my most recent one, I did self-publish, and I will probably continue to self-publish for the time being because you have more control. But Laura's right, there's a full-blown answer to that, and that's going to be a subject of a show one of these days.
Now if I just knew what compendium meant.
I was holding on to Stan. It's not just you. I wrote it down. Look this up.
What does that mean?
It means a lot.
It's sort of like having a football team, and you've got a whole lot of players you got to figure out what to do with.
Okay, let's keep those words a little
bit
on my level.
You can use that at
here.
Practice today.
You know, if my
I wrote it down.
If my wife is listening, she is shaking her and cheering all of you on.
Okay, good.
I don't have a question, but I do want to tell Laura real quick that I actually know somebody who has your journal.
Oh, wow.
She told me about it about 3 weeks ago and how excited she was about it and how much she loved using it. So I thought I'd pass
so
that on to you.
Please. Thank you. That's wonderful.
Well, I have a question for the whole panel because a theme of today's show for me seemed to be this idea of perseverance. And which it all, you know, it makes sense. And anyone you ever talk to that has any real degree of success, they tell you, you got to persist, you got to persevere. But how do you know when to bail? Because surely in some cases it's time to bail on this and pivot and move to the next thing. I'm curious, do any of you have your own personal discipline, or do you just feel it in your gut, or you don't know because you never have bailed? That's a big question for me.
That's a good question. I kind of have a gut feeling. I'm pretty not religious, but I'm spiritual, and I always watched. I think I watched the signs that the Lord puts in front of you. But it's always been a gut feeling for me, and I think you said it just a few minutes. I've never given up. And if I'm going to do something and it's a passion and something I feel like it should come out of me, I just stick with it. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
I'm not sure you ever bail.
Yeah.
It's more like you might put something on hold while you go to focus on something else, but never give up. I mean, if it's your dream to do it, you just keep after it. It might go slower than you wanted. It might go faster than you wanted. You just have to keep one step at a time working through it.
Those are both good answers, and I will say I have bailed. I gave up on opera singing. And
me too. What a coincidence.
Oh, that's dumb.
I gave up quicker than you did, probably.
And I think as I look back now, that the pain of continuing was greater than the pain of stopping. I'm actually writing a little article for Todd Schnick right now about how to get over your fears. Mm-hmm. And one of those ways that I was just formulating this idea just yesterday is that question, how will I feel if I do it? How will I feel if I take this risk and I get what I wanted? Okay. Mm-hmm. How will I take this risk and I get even more? I mean, not how will I feel? How will I feel if I take this risk and get even more than I wanted? And the maybe even more crucial question is, how will I feel if I don't take it?
That's a good question right there.
Also, how will I feel if I take it and I don't get what I want? But how will I feel if I don't take it? And if there is a sense of relief or a sense of... And truly, I believe it's a gut thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to listen to the true voices. You know, in fact, we've got to listen to all those voices. Bring them all out. Let them have a fight. And see who wins. See who says, in the end, I will feel the best. And then honor that voice. Because, you know, there's tomorrow and then there's 5 years from now. And then there's on our deathbeds. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm sure you've all heard, we hear all the time, we regret more what we didn't do than what we did do. And so I err on the side of taking the risk anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I always get that reward we talked about. But I also get more information. I get either closer to where I wanted to go, or I learn, gosh, you know what? I get to calibrate. I might not want to go there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me share with you, since you all were so good at this, I never intended to write a book.
Wow.
Well, I did when I was 9 years of age, and that lasted for 15 minutes, and I saw how long this was going to take. So I went off and played. But I was challenged by an individual to write a book. And that's the one that actually became my third book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my fourth one came out last September. So I have found my voice, mm-hmm. and I love it. Well, you know, the clock is on us. And it's been a delight to have a second show, and we're looking forward to a third and a fourth and a fifth. All of you who are listening, I welcome your comments and suggestions about Right Here, Right Now. You can email those to me, Tim@WRITE choiceservices.com, or you could even call me at 678-464-6702. And as always, thank you, Stone, for co-hosting and keeping me on track. I thank my three guests, Laura Bearing, Greta Yeager, and Stan Gay. I have really enjoyed our conversation, and I hope you have as well. Thank you to the listeners for joining us today for the second edition of Right Here, Right Now. We broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at www.businessradiox.com. The MP3 version is available later this afternoon on the Business Radio X website under Right Here, Right Now. And I ask you to join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.